Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Renee Schlepfer on how the Apostle Peter helps flawed people to follow Jesus.
If Peter has a message to all of us, it's start the journey, no matter what your flaws are or what you think your flaws are, and stay on the journey, no matter how often you fail Jesus Christ.
Renee Schlepfer, next. You might have heard someone say, "I'm so glad Peter's in the Bible, because then there's hope for a messed up person like me." In a much more comprehensive way, that's the theme of Pastor Renee Schlepfer's book, Flawed Follower, Travels with Simon Peter. Renee has pastored Twin Lakes Church near Santa Cruz, California, for more than 30 years, and he's a former announcer on Pilgrim Radio. Renee, tell us how you came to write Flawed Follower.
Yeah, there were a couple of reasons. The first one was several years ago, very, very personal to me. I had been at the church a few years, was very stressed out. There was a lot of work to do, not a lot of budget to do it with. And I was not eating right, wasn't exercising, wasn't really in the Word. And I got up from the couch to go to yet another meeting and I collapsed. My wife thought I was having a stroke or a heart attack, so we rushed to the hospital. The doctor who met us at the ER did all a battery of tests on me. And then he sat me down with a clipboard and he said, "Well, I've got good news for you." He said, "It's not your heart. It's not a stroke. But I have some follow-up questions." He said, "What do you do for a living?" Now, I was a pastor. And so in my sort of twisted mind at the time, I thought, well, I can't tell this unsaved doctor that I'm a pastor, because if a pastor is going through all of this mess, you know, maybe that's a bad testimony. Now, I don't think that way anymore, but in those days, part of the problem was that that's how I thought. And I said, "Well, I'm an educator." I obfuscated. And he said, "Oh, okay." He said, "Are you eating well?" I said, "No." He said, "Are you sleeping right now? Are you exercising?" "No." "Are you stressed?" "Yes, so stressed out." He says, "Your job's stressful." "Yeah, very stressful." And he said, "Well, Pastor Renee, my wife and children have been attending Twin Lakes Church now for a couple of months, and we really enjoy it, and I want to help you stay there, because what you're having is a severe anxiety attack, panic attacks." And he said, "What's happened is you've just driven yourself to the wall, and you're not taking Sabbaths. You're not living the way the Word tells us to live. And I feel like God has put us together so that I can help you get back on track." Thank God that I had a Christian doctor to help me go through all of that. And thank God that he was not just a doctor, but he had some real spiritual insight and spoke truth to me. So he put me on a nice regimen, which I followed his orders just rigorously, you know, sleeping and exercising and all of that. But one of the things he told me to do was to write down Bible verses by hand on 3x5 cards and verses I found encouraging, and that I should keep those verses wrapped in a rubber band in a stack just with me at all times and read them at different junctures in the day. Before I went to bed, I would read them and then put them under my pillow. So if I woke up in the middle of the night, I would read through some verses and, so that my mind wouldn't be thinking about all these horrible things, catastrophizing life. And then in the morning, I would read those verses before I would go to my phone or something else to check the news. Before I went into the office, I would read those verses. At lunch, read those verses, just putting them in my pocket like a wallet. And so after several months of writing down and reading these verses, I began to have them all memorized. And the ones that were really meaningful to me really bubbled up to the top, the verses that I would recite and go to and ponder again and again. And surprisingly, one of the verses, I would say the top verse that I kept going back to over and over again, is a verse that on its surface has nothing to do with anxiety, nothing to do with the challenges I was facing. But it's Matthew 16, 18, where Jesus tells Peter, "And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it." And it struck me, first of all, that Jesus says, "I will build my church." And as a pastor, I was trying to build the church, and I was putting all the weight of responsibility on my own shoulders, working too much in this vain effort, and probably vain in every sense of the word, to try to get success at that church, and not realizing I just needed to do my part and Jesus would build it in his time. I just need to plant the seed. And then as I kept meditating on this verse over all those months of recovery from that severe panic attacks, it struck me that he says, I tell you that you are Peter. And I'm thinking, the guy who he's deputizing as his main sort of assistant, mm-hmm. and the guy's going to take the baton along with the other apostles when he ascends to heaven after his resurrection, is the most impetuous, unstable, really unpromising, inconsistent man probably in the Bible, you know, and confused about the mission of Jesus. In fact, just a couple of verses later, Jesus says, and of course, I'm going to go to Jerusalem and I'll be, you know, condemned and crucified and on the third day rise from the dead. And Peter says, just let me just interrupt you. I don't want to ever hear you talking like that again. May that never happen. I mean, this guy's so unclear on the concept. And yet Jesus chooses a broken vessel like him, a flawed person like him, to not only be a follower, but really to be a leader. And that has come back to me again and again and again when I've failed as a pastor, when I've, you know, all kinds of ways. We all fail every day in large and small ways. And I keep coming back to, yeah, but Jesus Christ didn't choose a proven A player. Jesus Christ chose a guy who he already knew was unreliable. You know, he would promise things and, you know, overpromise and underdeliver. And yet, what Peter didn't know was his worst days were ahead of him. Jesus knew that Peter would deny him. Peter didn't even know that yet. And yet Jesus still chose him. And Jesus knew all the mistakes I would make in ministry and as a human, and he still chose me. And that just encouraged me so much. So that was great. And I became more and more interested in Peter as just such an interesting character in the Bible. But then lately, what I started to notice was more and more people coming to church in this post-Christian, post-modern era that we're in. And many of our visitors were not coming in as Christians, but they were intrigued by Jesus. But maybe, dozens or 100 times, I heard people tell me a form of, you know, I'm intrigued with Jesus, but I don't know if I fit in. Well, what do you mean by that? Well, you know, I can't do the Christian stuff. You mean come to church, but you are a church attender. No, I mean, be good like all of you and have no doubts like all of you and be so self-disciplined like all the rest of you are. You know, I'm so flawed. I don't know if I could ever call myself a Christian. And I realized that this was an unnecessary obstacle for so many people to following Christ, thinking they had to shape up first. They had to be perfect first. And then I would hear things like, you know, more and more at our church, I would hear things like, you know, I'm actually an atheist, or I was raised Buddhist, or I'm some other religion, an indigenous faith, a Native American, but I'm kind of intrigued by Jesus. Is that okay if I come to church? I hope you're not offended. And I said, well, offended? Of course not. And I said, you know, of course, none of the disciples Jesus called at first were Christians. What are you talking about? Well, they didn't understand anything about Jesus. They just found him intriguing, just like you. And so they came along to see what he did and to listen to his words and make their own decisions later on. In fact, the Apostle John writes that it wasn't until after his resurrection that they really connected the dots and became believers, really, in the sense that they were Christians. And so I said, so of course you're welcome. So I thought, I need to write a book for people about this colorful character who was full of flaws, both when Jesus called him and also continued to be full of flaws, and really was not a believer when he chose to follow Jesus Christ. And I thought that telling it as a narrative, sort of how Peter meets Jesus, would be powerful for people, and it's so far it's proven to be.
And you explained this to some extent already, Renee, but you found some very specific, if you will, personality characteristics that he had that you see them in yourself, that you feel well, like, yeah. Right? I mean, obviously he was a fisherman and you're a pastor, and there's a lot of differences there, but there's some real key similarities that you write about in the book.
Well, I heard somebody say Peter was one of those guys who walked into every room mouth first.
Yes.
And I thought about that. Yeah, check. My euphemism for myself is, well, I'm a verbal processor.
Right.
But usually there's a lot of verbal and very little processing going on. And this is Peter, right? You see, in fact, at the Transfiguration, when Peter, James, and John see Jesus and Moses and Elijah, this incredible vision, and they're talking with each other, and Peter pipes up and says, well, why don't we build some shelters? And Mark has an interesting comment in his gospel. He says, Peter said this because he did not know what to say. Only Peter would go, well, I don't know what to say, so consequently, I will say something. Which is, that's exactly my, maybe it's my radio background, Bill, but it's like, there's dead air, I've got to fill it. And this is Peter. Peter did not like dead air.
Yeah.
Peter, that's, nobody say anything, I'll say. And what's interesting is, too, that actually there isn't dead air going on. He's interrupting Jesus and Elijah and Moses. And then, if you remember, I don't know if you relate to this, but sometimes I get my stepdad used to tell me, apparently I was like this even as a teenager, he used to say, Renee, sometimes I think you got vaccinated with a phonograph needle. And I just would go on and on and on chatting like I'm doing now. And that's, you're even saying to yourself, I hope somebody interrupts me because I'm out of control right now. And God interrupts Peter and says, this is my beloved son. Listen to him. You know, like, Peter, stop talking. And so there's all kinds of sort of funny ways that, and tragic ways. You know, Peter puffs himself up. And when Jesus says, you'll all deny me and follow me, A, Peter contradicts Jesus, which takes some level of ego. Yeah, Jesus, you're wrong on that point. B, he says, even if they deny you, I won't. And they're right there. I can hear James and John going, we're right behind you, Peter. You know, we're in the room. And and then when Jesus says, well, you will deny me, and Peter continues to insist, no, you're wrong on that. And as we know, just a few hours later, after he's bragged, I won't deny you even the face of death. And the first person who challenges him is a teenage girl, and he crumbles. You know, this is so I think that's why Peter just appeals to people. And yet Peter also keeps being drawn to Jesus Christ. Clearly he loves Jesus. And I think if we're honest, all of us have that inside of us, this complexity. We're complex people. And sometimes we can fear that our complexity isn't acceptable to God, repels God. And yet clearly Peter is one of the most complex, psychologically and emotionally complex people in the pages of the Bible. And yet Jesus deputizes him as one of his chief followers.
Well, your new book is Flawed Follower, Travels with Simon Peter. My guest is Renee Schleffer. He pastors Twin Lakes Church in Aptos, California. It's near Santa Cruz. And there's some really interesting aspects about your book. The subtitle, Travels with Simon Peter. Tell us what that means, but then also there's some other aspects about the book that are really interesting.
We did travel, actually, in the footsteps of Simon Peter. We started in Galilee, where Peter met Jesus, right there in the fishing zone up in the northwest corner. And I actually went fishing with some Galilean fishermen on what is the oldest continuously operating fishing boat on the Sea of Galilee, commercial fishing boat. And so that was a lot of fun. Asked them a lot of questions. I actually went fishing with them with a net, just like Peter, James, and John did. And I also went paddleboarding on the Sea of Galilee. I love paddleboarding on the Pacific Ocean, but I figured this is the closest I'll ever get to walking on water.
Right.
And it was a ton of fun. And we met with some historians and archaeologists. I found some old tombs that are sort of off the beaten path in Judea, in the southern part of Israel, that we were able to explore a little bit and try to imagine what it was like for Peter to find the tomb of Christ empty. And then we ended in Rome, which is by all accounts where Peter ended his own earthly life. And I was able to explore a little bit, I say explore, visit with a group of 15, the once secret excavations underneath St. Peter's when they were looking for the ancient memorial to Peter that St. Peter's was built on. It was a lot of fun.
And your book has a multimedia aspect to it. It's more than just words on a page.
Correct. So at the end of every chapter, there's a QR code and a URL that people can follow to videos we shot on site, little 12-minute videos that we filmed after each chapter. Each of the seven chapters relates to a specific incident in Peter's life. And we filmed 12-minute videos actually on the, for example, I go out on the lake with the fishermen, and you can see that video of me fishing with these guys and so on. And so I recap some of the points in each chapter. We go to St. Peter's in Rome. We go to Jerusalem, and we go to Caesarea Philippi, right on the coast of the Mediterranean, where Peter met Cornelius. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, now, in the book, Flawed Follower, it's so interesting because you mention, and I don't think most of us would know this, that Peter is the most mentioned biblical character in the New Testament after Jesus.
Correct. And it's not even close. The other disciples, only John even gets up to a dozen mentions, you know, in the Gospels. And in Peter is mentioned in the New Testament 120 times. Mm. And so clearly he was venerated, respected by the early Christians. And really, his eyes are the windows through which we encounter Jesus Christ, when you think about it. Mm. This is controversial among some modern scholars, but in the early church, the very earliest writers who wrote about the sources for the New Testament Gospels all agreed that Mark's Gospel was a compilation of Peter's own recollections of being with Jesus, that John Mark had served as sort of an assistant to Peter as he later traveled the world. And that John Mark was writing down his recollections of Peter's own stories. So what makes that relevant is all these stories of Peter's foibles and faceplants we get from Peter.
That is amazing.
You know, that Peter is telling these stories on himself. And if you know what the literature of the first century Roman world was like, they're all bragging on themselves. When the Caesars are writing about themselves, or these philosophers, they never tell stories about how they messed up. And yet for Peter, he almost never, if he was the source for Mark's gospel, he's almost never telling a story about something he did right. And when he does, he follows it up with another faceplant almost immediately. And so it's fascinating that it's almost a modern way of telling your own story. And I think he did that because he knew, as a pastor, from a pastor's heart, that the kind of mentality I described I was seeing at my church, people were experiencing that in the first century too. I'm just not good enough. I don't know enough. I'm not sure if I really believe. And what Peter's trying to tell all these people is, listen, I was right where you were when Jesus called me. And I was kind of in that same spot for the first 3 years. So just keep following. Just tag along. And you will learn about Jesus, and he'll draw you to him. I read an article by Arthur C. Brooks. He was talking about the formation of religious faith, what research has shown us on this. And it was interesting because there's three components: practice, feelings, and beliefs, in that order. Hmm. Researchers say first people start with the practices. They start attending church, read the Bible, join a Bible study group, maybe join a choir or something. Then come the feelings. And I don't necessarily mean ecstatic feelings, but they're moved by a verse or mm-hmm. calmed by prayer, or they enjoy the fellowship, that sort of thing. Then they're motivated to study the doctrines, the beliefs. They start investigating intellectually and make decisions. So practice, feelings, beliefs. What's interesting is I think many of us reverse it. And we think it starts with beliefs. We got to talk people into being Christians. We got to argue them into the faith. We got to defend it. And once they get to the beliefs, then they'll get to feelings and practices, right? But actually, research shows us it's the reverse. And when you look at how Jesus made disciples, it is exactly the order that research shows us. It was first practices. He doesn't say, let me just explain to you Christian doctrine. Here is a multi-page statement of doctrine and conduct that I'd like you to sign to become my followers. He simply says, follow me. Mm-hmm. That's it. He doesn't explain a thing. and they start to follow and they start to watch. And then he starts asking them questions. And then there's feelings of astonishment and wonder and awe and confusion. And then, as I said, John says, they start to go, oh, this was prophesied in the Old Testament. They start to add it all up and they become believers. And I hope that what this, it's designed as a series where people can get the book, but there's small group questions in the back, 7 week small group sessions, which are designed for both believers and non-believers to explore Jesus through the eyes of Peter together. And what I hope happens is that people begin to meet Jesus in that order. They join one of these groups that's part of a church, and they see and hear what Jesus did and does, and then that they come to faith in Christ in exactly the order that Jesus called the original followers.
Well, your book is filled with so many insights and nuggets and things to think about and chew on that are I think going to be new to a lot of people. One thing I've never thought about was that Peter was a fisherman, as most of us know, but I don't think what we do realize is how fishermen were regarded in 30 AD.
Yes.
I mean, they were not exactly necessarily the first person you would invite. To a party.
Well, it's funny. I found one thing I had never seen before is there's a first century writer named Athenaeus, a Roman writer, and he considered himself a connoisseur of comedy. And he collected little bits and pieces from comedy plays that he liked, that he thought were clever. And he wrote a whole book about these things. That, in fact, that's the only way we know some of these comedies exist. But one whole chapter of his book is devoted to insults that he thought were hilarious directed against the fishing industry. But the Romans loved what fishermen produced. The Romans were crazy in the first century about something that called garum. It was fish sauce. Oh. It was the ketchup of antiquity. And and they just put it on everything, including mixed drinks, and they just loved this fish sauce, and it was made with sardines or anchovies, and so they needed huge quantities. And the Sea of Galilee produces tons and tons of sardines to this day. And so what would they be fishing for with nets in the Sea of Galilee was sardines, some of which was pickled and dried for local consumption, but I'm sure a lot of it was used as fish sauce, because that's what the Romans needed. And so it's almost like the way people, I think, these days sometimes treat farm workers. They love their veggies, but they can look down on farm workers. Mm-hmm. And that's almost where fishermen were in the Roman world at the time.
Mm. I want to ask you, Renee, and there's so much to ask you, and I want people to, of course, read the book, get the book. You have an audiobook version of this.
Right.
And, of course, the multimedia aspect of it. But just thinking of Peter's life, where he was so confident before Jesus was arrested and before all of that happened, the crucifixion, and of course he betrayed him so quickly, as you said, and he ends up as a leader in the church, writing scripture.
Yeah.
And what does that say about how God maybe works in all of our lives?
Well, that's the whole point, of course, is that it doesn't, I mean, it tells us a lot about Peter, but it tells us mostly about Jesus and how Jesus works in us in the miraculous way he works. No one else. If anybody would have hired Peter for this job, he would have gotten fired a dozen times over for his job performance. But Peter never fired any of his disciples, did he? I mean, Jesus didn't. And what Jesus does is work within us through the power of the Holy Spirit to transform us into absolute world changers. And then you see Peter's first sermon, 3,000 people mm-hmm. come to Christ. It's funny because you never see Peter successfully sharing his faith with anybody, not even one person up until that moment. He doesn't even defend Christ successfully to one person until that moment. And suddenly there's 3,000 people coming to Christ through his first sermon. And I thought it's just like Peter's experience fishing. He hadn't caught one single fish the night before he meets Jesus. And then Jesus says, put out your net over there. And the net's full. And Peter went, as a fisher of men, he went from zero to a net full instantly as well. And that, I think, gives us confidence, all of us. We may have a backstory full of failure and no results and no fruitfulness, but in Christ, as we continue to follow him day by day, suddenly that can change. You know, incremental growth, step by step, day by day, and all of a sudden, and we know it from gardening, all of a sudden the tree's full of lemons. All of a sudden the strawberries are everywhere when it seemed like nothing's even going to happen. It's just dirt. And that's exactly how the fruit grows in us. As we abide in Christ, then we become fruitful.
I know I have to let you go shortly here, but it's so fascinating too, where you go back and forth between Peter's time, between the biblical time, and back to the modern time, back to your visit to the various places where Peter had significant things happen in his life. Was there something that changed for you in that trip, going there on site? Did the Lord do something in you, contemplating Peter, contemplating this place and what happened here?
Where do I begin? There's so many things. But aside from what I've mentioned, I think the biggest surprise for me initially when I went to Galilee was how beautiful it is. I mean, it's quite lush. It's got a beautiful subtropical climate. And the plants that they grow there now, bananas and mangoes, it's still verdant and,
yeah.
And they have hundreds and hundreds of different bird species. It's quite lovely. And I had always envisioned the places where Jesus ministers as being desert, because in the Jesus movies, it's almost always desert. But this is a very nice subtropical area. In fact, Capernaum, where Peter lived, Kapper from Kafar means village, and Nahum is a male name, but it means comfort. So the literal meaning of Capernaum is Comfortville. You know, Galilee's nice. It's lush. It's comfortable. The temperature's nice. The winter temperature average is 57 degrees. Summer, it's 88 degrees. I mean, it's more like Hawaii than it is like Death Valley. And what I'm getting at is, when Peter left his nets to follow Jesus, it wasn't like he was leaving some mediocre situation. You know, this is a nice place. Mm-hmm. And to be willing to say, well, I don't even know what I believe about this guy yet, but he's really worth checking out. To leave that's what really struck me, actually seeing it and feeling it. There's flowers everywhere. You know, it's really a beautiful spot, of a corner of the world, that Peter would leave that and literally Comfortville to follow Jesus. And how often it's comfort that keeps us from following Christ. Maybe the comfort of being well regarded by our friends, and we're afraid of, I say to my friends, I'm starting to go to church, they'll think I'm some fanatic, or the comfort of my own worldview, which I might have to alter if I follow Jesus Christ. And so I think that's the thing that struck me most, and really, really struck me, was what a nice place Peter had to leave in order to follow Christ.
Well, the book is Flawed Followers, Travels with Simon Peter, and I like what else is on the cover there, Renee. I don't know if it's a second subtitle or not, but Hope for Imperfect, Inconsistent, Confused People Who Still Love Jesus.
Thanks to the Lord that we can all come to him with all of our flaws, all of our imperfections, all of our inconsistencies, all of our confusions about Bible teaching. And Jesus's response to us is always the same. Why don't you keep following? And let's see what happens to those flaws. Keep following. Let's see what happens to those questions. Keep following Jesus. If Peter has a message to all of us, it's start the journey, no matter what your flaws are or what you think your flaws are, and stay on the journey, no matter how often you fail Jesus Christ.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Renee Schlepfer, pastor of Twin Lakes Church near Santa Cruz, California, and author of Flawed Follower, Travels with Simon Peter. Go to flawedfollower.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you can join us again on Monday at the same time for another edition of His People.